Welcome to Chronic Comeback Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions with your hosts, Tyler from TB Scouting MMA and
Guru Scouting MMA, back for a particularly peculiar card, UFC Vegas 31 or UFC on ESPN 26, Makhachev versus Moises. And, you know, if you try to put past the fact that we were supposed to have Holloway and Yair Rodriguez tonight, it is actually a pretty decent card. But we get to break it down with Alex Bihunin of Cage Side Press. Alex, what a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. It's really looking forward to it. Alex does a lot of work interviewing fighters and really knows a lot about the background and has been such a huge fan of the game for a long time. It's going to be awesome to bring like that type of perspective to this podcast, because sometimes we get our heads stuck in the sand on, you know, this thing, that thing, and the line and this and that. And man, it should be fun to break this one down. So without further ado, let's get right down into it. It's headlined by Islam Makhachev and Thiago Moises, but we'll be starting at the bottom of the card here. To kick off the prelims, we got Alan Bodeau versus Rodrigo Nascimento. And I probably just mispronounced his first name. It's Rodrigo Nascimento, correct? We got the Brazilian coming in. It's awesome. But I think one of the things that I saw first looking into this matchup, it stood out. Fight Night Picks has talked about it. Lock the Night has talked about it. Alan Bodeau came into the UFC off of a quote-unquote win in TKO that was really a third-round submission overturned for the weed.
It should be a no contest, right? But because of TKO specific rules, it's a win for him. It doesn't make it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
So then you have Rodrigo Nascimento coming off Dana White Contender Series. Highly acclaimed jiu-jitsu practitioner. Last I saw, he has a brown belt, but only 28 years old, huge frame. And it says that Bodeau is really, you know, an inch taller, only giving up an inch of reach. But when you look at these guys standing next to each other at weigh-ins, I really think Nascimento is going to be, you know, having a nice size advantage. And along with the grappling, I really just didn't see Bodeau do anything impressive against Aspinall. I just can't help but feel like the line is pretty appropriate here. We have it at plus 280 for Bodeau and minus 350 Nascimento at the current moment. I seem to think that's fair. And by finish, you know, that's in the minus 200 range. So, I mean, do you see anything different here?
I'm not sure I agree necessarily that the line is where it should be. I think generally speaking in heavyweight MMA, the line, unless you're really highly skilled, which we know that these guys necessarily aren't, I think inherently the line should be a little bit closer because of the knockout factor. Alain Bodeau, from what we've seen of him, he really likes to utilize a lot of different spinning attacks. The problem is that he puts no real telegraph. I mean, he telegraphs everything. He puts no real orthodox feint in front of anything. So he's just kind of spinning around, gassing out. It's really quite concerning. Listen, Tom Aspinall is an amazing prospect. There's no doubt about that. But when Tom Aspinall like kind of pushed him to the ground, I mean, it was like a third grader. Like he just covered up. I mean,
immediate full mount.
Immediate full mount. And again, it's one thing to get mounted or whatever, or to get your guard passed through like butter. Like, I mean, it happens. But then, like, when he went to mount, like, there was no bucking. There was no – he just covered up and got obliterated. Like, that was it. And that's not a good sign for somebody that – I mean, again, we're not sure how good his takedown is. He's going to start spinning and put himself in precarious situations. And we know Rodrigo Nascimento wants to, you know, put him on the ground and try to choke him out. Or, you know, ground and pound, but, you know, probably choke him out. So – I do lean Nascimento, obviously. I think it's tough to play him at minus 350. I want to. I'd see Nascimento by submission at plus 100 or even by decision at plus 500. So,
I mean, Alex, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Please.
to be honest, guys, I think Alan Bro, the only reason why he's in the UFC is because he's Francis Ngannou's training partner. And because the UFC has a very shallow heavyweight division. And so I think Namacento should beat Bodo anywhere it goes. Anywhere it goes, this should be a walk in the park. I think the Brazilian gets it done round one.
I really like that. I do think that Nascimento is just going to be too much from a talent perspective. He really held his own on the feet against Dontel Mays in a striking battle before getting him to the ground. And, you know, it's not such a bad thing to get pieced up by Chris Daukaus. And it's not like he got put out immediately. He got up a couple times. He was trying to fight back. And, I like Alex said, and like Guru said, I mean, it really does seem like Nascimento should win this fight.
And is he still training with? Because I know he's training with Ferdinand Lopez, right? And Ciryl Gane, right? Because right. I guess he got into the UFC when he was Ngannou's training yes. partner, and Ngannou's since left them, right? I was checking myself.
No. You're right. No, he is Ciryl Gane's training partner right now.
Right.
They were all in that.
They were all together yes. at MMA mm-hmm. Factory. Yes. Yeah. Because you're not wrong. I just, yes.
100%. No.
You're good. Thank you.
And Nascimento, American top team. So it's not like he's coming out of a bad gym himself. Yeah. I really think, it seems pretty straightforward. And Nascimento, I mean, he's a parlay piece for me. That brings us to our next fight where, you know what? I don't think that this line is justified, guys. Francisco Figueiredo, notoriously Davison Figueiredo's brother, someone who fought at bantamweight 135 until he made his UFC debut. Shout out to Rockstar Z, now Z's MMA. He corrected me on Twitter. Thank you for pointing out my errors, because that Jerome Rivera fight in his debut was at flyweight. And, he did make the cut. He did it successfully. But, man, to be the only guy in the UFC not to have knocked out Jerome Rivera in their UFC fight against each other, that really stands out to me. And just, he was way too eager to get in the clinch and get the fight to the ground, and where, you know, that's technically Rivera's strong suit. And against a guy like Malcolm Gordon, I mean, he was rolling around with Amir Albazi for a full round and being competitive. I know that Sue Madergi fight leaves a really bad taste in everyone's mouth about Malcolm Gordon, but I watched it back and I remembered it was one punch and he just crumpled over. The dude was getting fucking pieced up, like, big time early. And he took 4 punches in succession, a couple hooks, a straight. He was getting rocked. I mean, Malcolm Gordon, I know he's got the 4 knockout losses. I know he also lost by submission to Albazi.
It's extremely concerning.
It's concerning, but not when you're facing a guy like Figueiredo that couldn't even manage to put Jerome Rivera out. And, I mean, that guy gets hurt by everybody. So, to me, I see the -300 on Figueiredo and +245 on Gordon. This is one where I feel like, just, you know, Gordon, a black belt, so he's going to be able to keep up in the grappling aspect. And I really think that Figueiredo is getting overrated just by who he's related to. And it's going to be worth it for me to not make a huge play. This is not a bet of the night, but I'm going to take a little sprinkle on the underdog in Malcolm Gordon.
Yeah, so I certainly don't hate anybody playing the underdog in this spot. I think if you're playing money line, it has to be dog or pass. Because like we said, we've talked about on this show before, no matter how, it's all about how good a fighter is. It doesn't, a -300, -400, the fighter has to earn that number. And Francisco Figueiredo absolutely has not earned that number by any stretch of the imagination. So that is not, a price that we're going to be willing to pay, or certainly I'm not. The problem with Malcolm Gordon is that he's really giving you absolutely nothing to feel good about. That's a really big problem. He has not won a fight since April of 2019. He had a bunch of canceled fights and then comes to the UFC and again loses to Amir Albazi. No shame. That's a top prospect. He's tough. And Sue Madarji, who is good, looked decent against in his next fight against Adish Zarouk. Zaruk Adashev, but not fantastic. I came away from that fight a little. I mean, it wasn't great. So it wasn't the best showing anyway.
I think everyone expected a finish, and he went to decision. So that's right. Kind of what was the disappointment.
I guess more of what I'm leaning towards. So my general thought is that Malcolm Gordon is not as bad as his last two performances, and he's not fighting as tough of a striker here as we've pointed out. He's not a power puncher. He's not a fantastic striker. He's not his brother. What I like here is, will the fight go the distance plus 152? I don't think I don't know why they're expecting a finish per se, especially when it's a flyweights that finishes don't always happen. I guess they're banking on the fact that Malcolm Gordon is not durable, and like we're kind of talking about, they could be flash knockouts from really good strikers. So that being said, he's been knocked out before. So
very true.
Let's turn that over to Alex. I feel like we don't get enough Alex.
I mean, again, both these guys are bottom of the barrel flyweights, to be honest. And no disrespect to either of these guys, but I think Figueiredo is only in the UFC because of his brother. Malcolm Gordon, he does have an 83% finish rate. So, I mean, he does have a chance to obviously put Figueiredo away. You guys nailed it on the head. I mean, we have not seen nothing. We haven't seen dog shit out of Malcolm Gordon. Nothing. So it's like, how could you feel confident at all putting anything on him? Other than the fact that Figueiredo had a very subpar debut. I mean, he was the only one that didn't finish Jerome Rivera, like you said. I'm actually very depressed that we didn't get Francisco Figueiredo versus Jimmy Flick. That was the fight that was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Before Flick retired.
In a barn somewhere. In the middle of nowhere. I retire, everybody. Oh, all right. So good for you. I'm happy for him, but like, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's a bummer. So, I'm with you guys. I think Figueiredo probably finishes Gordon.
You would hope that he could get the finish, you know, given his pedigree. You would hope.
Although I will put this: Malcolm Gordon has his back against the wall. If he loses, he gets cut. And fighters with their back against the wall this year have already showed, like, you know, they come out and perform.
See, that's the perspective I'm talking about right there. Especially we're talking about catching Malcolm Gordon overall at a plus 245. And like I said, this isn't my biggest play of the night. I know this is extremely greasy. We acknowledge it's bottom of the barrel, you know, UFC level type of betting. But
yeah, you can
rationalize. I'm getting like a little itch, you know, a little.
Yeah, you rationalize your degeneracy any way you need to, pal. I like what he said. I'm gonna take a stab on the over. I'm gonna take a stab on that. To go the distance, because if there's a very small though, because if there's a flash, whatever, it's fine.
Would we really be that surprised?
You know? No, but exactly. I don't think either of these guys are that big of finishers. Like, I think they're gonna both be kind of tentative. Like, if you don't finish Jerome Rivera, you might not finish Malcolm Gordon. It might be the same level.
Fade the narrative.
And yeah, that's what I'm about. So that would be my one. Otherwise, stay, like, there's other fights to bet.
Yes.
There's an awesome card next week, not to not listen to this amazing podcast, but there's an amazing card. You know, sometimes funds are limited.
Don't force it.
Don't force it is my point. But you, we got what? Great fights to bet on.
I you know what? I retract my prediction. And I think if Figueiredo is going to beat Gordon, it will be by decision. But if there is a finish in the fight, it will be Malcolm Gordon finishing.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Yeah, and see, like you said, the back against the wall type of idea, that's really interesting.
I like
really
that.
Really interesting.
And by the way, this is at 125, so make sure you get your weight cut glasses on, your magnifying glass, and you're inspecting these guys, because it's going to be a tough cut.
Yeah, definitely. So that brings us right along. We got another solid prospect here, 11-1 Miles Johns, facing the the ever fighting Anderson Dos Santos, 21-8 overall, 35 years old, against Miles Johns at 27. And, you know, it was really interesting to see Miles Johns suffer that flash knockout against Mario Bautista, the flying knee in round two.
Interesting or brutal. Oh my goodness.
Well, yeah, yeah. I think just as far as like a projection standpoint and how he was kind of valued when he first came in and coming out of Fortis, especially like the type of momentum that camp has had. I think it was like, you know, extremely surprising, especially for everyone that was backing him big there. And now, you know, he comes back, he has a pretty nice performance against Natividad, but the most concerning thing to me was his grappling inefficiency in that fight. For someone that comes out with like a wrestling background, you know, Miles Johns, he doesn't get a single takedown, and officially he shot for 7 of them. So either, you know, Natividad has some crazy takedown defense, or like, is he really going to have like the most success against a high level black belt in Anderson Dos Santos, who, you know, let's be honest here, you know, in his first two fights, you know, we're seeing Andre Ewell, Narmani, and then you get Martin Day. So you did what you were supposed to. Right. Good on you. But is Anderson Dos Santos just another guy for Johns to get back, you know, his prospect status rolling again? I'm feeling that way, but the line's still like decently close at -190. I think the first round finish by Dos Santos last time out is kind of what makes it trend to the closer side, because you would think a guy like with the name value like Miles Johns, as far as the prospect status, normally those guys like we're seeing like Francisco Figueiredo is like -300. Like, I think it could be the same. Like, if Dos Santos didn't have that win against Day in the first round, it was like a decision and boring. I mean, what do you think the line would be? You know, that's my kind of thought. So I think Miles Johns is a pretty solid play straight up. Maybe if you wanted to take like a decision prop, because I'm not sure he gets a finish here. But 3 knockouts on Dos Santos' record, don't count it out.
I agree. I'm not sure how much there really is to say about this fight. It's kind of a weird fight. Anderson Dos Santos is one of those kind of middling guys that has come in at like a little bit of a later age, and he's quote-unquote a prospect, but again, not really, because he's at a later age. He lost his first two fights versus Nad Narimani and Andre Ewell. Gave up a takedown to Martin Day, who's a Taekwondo guy. So that's not, I mean, he only got controlled for like 15 seconds, but that's not necessarily a great showing. And Miles Johns, who I had in high regard, got knocked out by Mario Bautista, like we talked about. And that was brutal. And then had a war with Natividad, where like in later fights, again, Bautista then gets knocked out by Trevin Jones, and Natividad ends up fighting again and gets knocked out even worse by Bacaril. So that's not really like a good, you know, crumbling of like the way the trickle down of his opponents, you know, like how that's happened. So it does give me some pause, but yeah, I do like Miles Johns in this spot. You can't really trust Dos Santos because you're not really sure what you're getting at 35 years old. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, this is going to be a boring decision fight. I'm just going to say it. I think Miles Johns is going to outpoint him, wrestle him, and win a UD. I'm not really impressed with either of these guys. Dos Santos is fun to watch, I will say that, obviously. But I hope Miles Johns, if he were to get the win, I think they do the Miles Johns versus Adrian Yanez rematch, because the first time they fought was a split decision and it could have went either way. And so there's some heat on that. You can sell the rematch, and the UFC is going to push Adrian Yanez in that fight next week with Randy Costa.
I guess we should tease that we're gonna have Adrian Yanez on the podcast next week to help us break down fights and maybe a little quick interview. So that's a wonderful segue for that. But yeah, this fight is really quite tough to call in that respect. And the Vegas odd makers, by the way, do agree with you, Alex. At chalk -176, this fight will go the distance. So unless you can figure out who's going to win the decision, it's going to be tough to make money on this one.
I guess if you want John's by points, you can get him at plus 120.
I mean, that if I'm like betting every fight of the card, that's definitely the bet I would take on this one.
Or yeah, I mean, and I guess John's at minus 190 isn't the worst line. I guess we'd always prefer him a little lower. But
yeah.
All right. So you're telling me that he has to win this fight 7 out of 10 times for us to profit. So that kind of tells us that we should maybe stay away from this fight, actually.
Mm.
But the line's a little overpriced, right? Because we probably think if they fight 100 times, maybe he wins 65 times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough.
I think you're basically banking on Dos Santos getting some like freak finishes mixed in there, which like I get because it's baked into why the line is closer.
Yeah.
Then it might be, once again, like I said, if Dos Santos didn't have that finish last time out, I do think that, you know, John's might be priced closer to like a minus 300, in which case I'd be like, stay away. But, you know, plus 120 on a decision, like just a little something, you know, maybe, you know. But yeah, that's the most likely scenario, it seems. So, I mean, right on along to our next fight here where, Alex is letting us know. I think I agree. I mean, this has fight of the night potential written all over it, right?
Wow, it's certainly an interesting one. I think it's the fans' favorite, the crowd favorite right now. The diehard favorites, I should say. This is a really interesting one because Sergey Morozov had a really really tough matchup in his debut, and Umar Nurmagomedov is a savage. I mean, he's like a hybrid.
He got the Nurmagomedov that's a striker. Gets subbed by him. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, oh my
yeah, God. that guy's a savage. And you know, Khalid Taha, this seems to be a theme for me. I held him in very high regard after the Barcelos fight, even though he, you know, it was a fight of the night. I mean, he really got like 30-26 or whatever. I mean, it was brutal. I don't know. I had like some sort of affinity for him. But then I watched Ronnie Barcelos just fight Timur Valiyev. And that didn't go so well for Barcelos. You know, he gets older, didn't look as great. So it kind of puts, at least for me, Khalid Taha back in a bad light. So I start to think about it. Well, what's happened for Khalid Taha? He hasn't won a fight since he won in October of 2019 in round 3 against Bruno Silva, but the fight got overturned because of steroids. So that's not really a great look. And then before that, he won in April against Boston Salmon, who's had like his own really weird career. I hope he's doing okay after that crazy injury or whatever. That was really messed up in that fight, yeah. And then Nad Narimani rears his head again, and he lost his debut to Nad Narimani. So, I don't, like, what have we seen from Taha at any point recently? I mean,
he has an iron chin.
You'd hope at 28 that he's, you know, quote unquote, in his prime, or, you know, achieving his, what he needs to achieve in the gym. But, I don't really know. And then, you see Sergey Morozov, who, again, had that tough fight, showed himself pretty decently in a lot of different areas in that fight. And you get him at a dog price when maybe the fight should be pick'em. So what do you think, guys?
Oh, man. Like I said, this is – it has the banger potential, especially these guys stand – and bang, because these guys have, I think I wrote an article today. I believe it's 16 finishes, 16 knockouts between the both of them.
Yes, wow. eight each.
Yeah. So, Taha is very, very aggressive. Comes forward. My thing is if Sergey implements grappling, wrestling, that will be the downfall of Taha. And if he was smart, he'd probably do that because I don't know if he wins the striking exchange. Although he is the better, crisper striker, in my opinion, Taha is just that guy, man. He's
a savage.
Yeah, he is.
He's a little bit more reckless, whereas Sergey was definitely more technical, but he also was a little bit more measured too. So it was. It it could work against them. And what's kind of interesting that you bring up is that you mentioned how many of these fights of their fights have not gone the distance. This fight to not go the distance is plus 150. So odds makers have it at nearly minus 200 that the fight will go the distance. Mm. So I find that as a very interesting handicap. I would kind of almost want to fade that narrative. I'd rather play your narrative and fade the Vegas narrative is what I'm saying. Mm. Because I don't, why is it? Why is it so certain that it's going to go to decision here?
I think they're thinking that Sergey is going to wrestle Taha and get the decision. I'm guessing that's what Vegas is.
Taha's the favorite.
Oh, is yeah. it?
Is the favorite? Yeah, that's yeah. We can get Sergey Morozov at plus 130. So that's like the other weird thing.
So I see Alex's reaction to hearing that Taha's the favorite. Yo, tell me what you're thinking right there.
That he should be gambling. He should be a gambler right now.
Because I'm sitting here, I'm letting you guys, you know, get your pieces out on this fight. I mean, Sergey Morozov is my favorite dog on the whole card here. I know that a lot of people are talking about someone else coming up, and I'm tempted on that one too, but this is my favorite. Morozov has faced Umar Nurmagomedov, like we spoke about. He's also faced Mosvar Evleyev, lost by round 3 submission. And to make it 3 rounds with that guy grappling in M1, I mean, damn. He's lost by 2 submissions in his career to those last 2 guys that I spoke about. 1 knockout a whole long time ago. Also 1 decision loss. So it's not like Morozov is above losing a fight, but he came out of M1. He was a 2-time bantamweight champion. He's a master of sports in pancration. So like we said, he does have that grappling background, that well-rounded experience. And we've seen Khalid Taha. I mean, I remember in the Barcelos fight, I put down for a submission win for Barcelos, and he nearly had it wrapped up in the first round and really kind of gassed out and never went back to the grappling. So if Morozov, who I've seen have some extremely impressive defensive grappling, as far as trying to do like those rolls to get out of a back take. Yeah, I just think Morozov, he has the crisper overall striking. Is he above getting caught? No, that's why this fight could be so exciting. And Taha, he's got an iron chin. So no, the pathway isn't Morozov by finish. It's not by knockout, at least. He needs to get to the grappling realm. I'm not really going to play a prop specifically because the plus 130 for Morozov, I think, is interesting enough for me. But just to take a look, because you know I love my sub plays of the day.
You can Morozov get Morozov by plus 1,200
by submission. I mean, those are the type of plays I'm looking for, because if I just want to put a couple dollars down and I think he's going to go, like Alex is saying here, you know, possibly a grappling-heavy game plan, I mean, it's plus 1,200.
I actually didn't get to tape this fight, unfortunately, but the fight before his UFC debut, he beat a guy you guys may know, Josh Redinghouse, who was just on the Ultimate Fighter this past weekend. This past Tuesday. So, yeah. And that was, you know, we saw Josh Redinghouse's style. He's he's a grinder. He is a technical striker. He was not a great grappler per se, but, you know, I just think that was fairly interesting because, you know, you don't always know, like I can't even pronounce half the other guy's names that he fought. So
I'm kind of speechless that Taha's the favorite, to be honest with you.
Yeah, man. And like that reaction from you is what sold me, because I was already sitting here like ready to like burst on the underdog play. And I was like, damn, man, like, no, because that was the feeling I got when I first saw it.
Yeah, there's definitely seems to be a decent amount of clamoring that Morozov is a solid play. I feel like that line has slipped a little bit, right? Was it high? Wasn't it like plus 150?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's still juicy enough for me. The fact that he's still plus anything, you know, that's really where I feel on this fight. So
That's our dog of the day for sure. I mean, there weigh-ins, pending weigh-ins.
Yeah, I mean, I might throw down a little earlier so we don't lose any more value. But Jeesh. Hell yeah, why not? But. All right, but you know what? It's tomorrow morning. Maybe I should just be slightly more patient. anyways, so we got our next fight. Talk about wide lines. Possibly deservedly so, but Amanda Lemos versus Montserrat Conejo Ruiz. I mean, talk about a fan favorite fight here. Is Conejo coming out with the bunny ears and the little tail again and going to shake her butt?
I hope so.
Alex is saying, yeah, she's confirming. He's confirming it. Have you interviewed her?
You're going to be in person, you bastard.
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not going to be there.
No, no, that's the next one.
Next week.
Oh, man.
I was jealous that you were going to see that in person.
Talk about a bad bunny.
Jeez, keep your day job, pal.
No, that's believe me, I'm not quitting that. Okay, -550 for Lemos, +410 Ruiz. Damn, I mean, that is a wide line, but like at the same time, Lemos, she was a 135er before her 2-year suspension, dropped down to 115, and I mean, talk about some domination. Poor Mizuki, I actually bet her in that fight because I really liked her grappling style, you know, coming out with Ray Longo and all that. But I mean, Lemos really just was able to stuff the takedown attempts in the clinch, turn it around on her, just piece her up. And then she comes out and faces, oh my God, Lavinia Sosa. And I bet on Lavinia Sosa because she's like the little mini Nate Diaz, like so funny personality and like, yeah, no. That was a stinker because she landed one significant strike.
I was on Lemos there big time. I tried to get you off, Sousa.
You tried, bro.
I tried. I tried really hard. I was almost like personally insulted in that fight that I couldn't convince you. Yeah. And then I remembered feeling so good about beating you on one, and then you beat me on like 8 after that. So
yeah, but I mean, that's how it goes.
The feeling faded quickly.
I mean, let's be real here, though. There's like one way that there's two ways this fight goes. Either it's Lemos controlling from distance the entire time with her Muay Thai striking and distance and all that. But like Conejo's going to like try to run through all that in the beginning, and she's going to get her in the clinch. She'll get her in the clinch, but I don't think she lands the head and arm throw this time. I just think like the size is a little bit too much in this one. Alex, what you seem to think something here.
Yeah, man, so I'm a big Montserrat Ruiz fan. I am.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
She's rad. I've talked to her. I haven't done a video interview just because she doesn't like to do video interviews because her English is broken and it's not perfect. But so people are probably I'm going to guess one of the reasons why the line's so big is because of her last fight, which people are forgetting. She took that fight on less than a week's notice. Shine Bays, she is the striker, right? And so Montserrat Ruiz had the perfect game plan because she knew Cheyenne could not stop her throw.
Had her on throw, yeah.
Yeah, it just, she couldn't do it. And if you can't stop it, fuck it, you know? I mean, and she won. Now, and it's crazy that she's only 5 foot. That is insane to me. I saw her in Arizona when I was at 263, and she is tiny. She's tiny.
I was in Arizona for 263. We should have met up.
Yeah, for sure. We should have. But Amanda Lemos. She is coming down from 135. She is a tank and she throws bombs. There is a big chance that Montserrat wants to box with her,
she's not gonna be able to, in my opinion.
Yeah. And if she does that, she's gonna get put to sleep. The thing is if Montserrat wrestles, because she was a high school champion wrestler. If she grapples with Amanda Lemos, I think she has a chance to UD her. I don't think that's going to happen, though.
That's fair.
I'm trying to take my bias out of it. You know what I'm saying? I like her so much that I'm like, you know, maybe there's this chance. I just don't know if there is. Although if she does beat Amanda, she takes her number 14 ranking and she'll be ranked in her second. You know what I'm saying?
As huge underdogs in both fights.
I would love for her to win as well. I think the size is going to prove a problem. Yeah. She's one of the girls that really suffers from not having an atomweight division. She's pretty much like on weight before even having to cut. That's going to be a problem against this girl, Lemos, who had to, like we've talked about, was up much higher weight classes and has to cut down now. I will be concerned and want to see her at weigh-ins. But one of the things that you bring up which is very interesting, we both did, is that she's going to want to get into the clinch. And how do you get into the clinch? Well, you have to get through somebody striking. Lemos lands six strikes per minute. Six strikes per minute. And she's had – it's not – she's had four fights. You know what I mean? Three fights. This will be her fourth. So her stats are not necessarily super fluky. Like, she's earned those six strikes per minute. And that's going to be a problem for Conejo. I'm the worst. I took French. Conejo?
Conejo.
That's going to be a problem for her because, I mean, in her one fight versus Baez, you know, she still only had a 52% striking defense. And she was busy throwing her for most of the fight. So,
yeah, that third round got a little scary, right?
Right. Very scary. So I actually kind of, after talking with Alex and maybe hearing some of his bias, I think it puts me on the Lemos by finish.
Yeah.
Which we could get at plus 110. That's not even really that juicy.
I like, enough. No, plus 200 by knockout, I was going to say, is actually what I'm most interested in.
I was just worried about the submission, too, but you're right.
No, but
you're not going to want to wrestle with her. No, you're going to go for the ground and pound.
Just a little background. I mean, when I was doing my notes originally for Conejo's debut, I saw, you know, she's at a 10th Planet. She's at a King's MMA. She's also a Southpaw. But, like, the things I didn't like is, like, she's extremely heavy on her lead leg, doesn't move her head well, and doesn't really vary her entry. So it's like, if you told me she was going for single legs and double legs, I might be, like, more willing to be like, well, she has more notice, her cardio will be better, you know, she looks like she's in great shape. But it's just tough to say, like, she's going to go for the head and arm throw. Like, that's what she's going to do. And I just, and that first entry into the clinch is going to tell us so much about this fight. And, like, anyone that took her, like we're saying, you know, I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, plus 410, plus 410. Like, yeah, you know, I mean, you want to take that chance if you think she's going to go out there with that game plan. I'm just afraid that she's not going to. And that head movement is just not there. And she's it's 4 inches of height, 4 inches of reach. I really want to see Conejo win because she's a much more fun prospect. And, like, against the odds and, like, all that stuff, Lemos is already 34. So it's not like she's really, like, the youngest prospect out there at 115. Like, Conejo's only 28.
She's young in miles on her tread, though. They have the same amount of fights, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that, like, Ruiz is built more like a tank, you know? Like, so if she comes out there with better cardio and she gets in and she's going for single legs and double legs so that there's better control instead of going for the throw and possibly getting reversed.
You mean Lemos is built more like a tank?
No, I mean, Ruiz, like, she's short, compact, and, like, sturdy.
Like a small tank,
but, like,
I guess.
But, like, well, yeah, I mean, but Lemos. No, but, like, Lemos, I see her more as, like her total size, and she did cut down a lot. So, like, it's not like she's, like, the biggest as far as, like, stacked muscle or anything. She's very wiry and, like, and she's a beast in that regard. And she's a tank herself. I just think, like, when we're talking about, like, someone like Conejo, like, I think she's usually the one dealing out damage and controlling fights. It was just like that Danielle Taylor loss was really not a great look on her record in Invicta, especially given, like, the volume that Taylor normally throws.
Yeah, but, I mean, Danielle Taylor is, like, an established veteran, you know, towards the tail end of her career at that point. But, you know, like, that, it's not the worst loss ever. Obviously, it would be better if she won.
It just shows to me that, like, if she lost a fight like that, like, I didn't think Cheyenne Baez was necessarily ready for the UFC, a Dana White Contender Series fade opportunity. And Lemos is just, like, not that person. Like, she beat Mizuki. No. She beat Lavinia Sosa. She beat Miranda Granger. And she lost to Leslie Smith. I just don't think Conejo is Leslie Smith.
In her debut. Point.
Yeah, exactly. So, at 135.
Any last thoughts, Alex?
I was going to say, and she took 2 years off because she popped for banned substances. So she was suspended for 2 years. I'm obviously rooting for Ruiz.
I think we all are, and that's a good reason to stay away from the fight from a betting perspective, or just take a very, very small flyer on Ruiz money line if that's, you know, if you're that kind of, you know, if you have that kind of soft heart. But
I'm with you guys. I just have a bad feeling she's going to try and have that Mexican spirit and try and box with Amanda, and she's going to get beat up.
Mm. It's very possible. So that is kind of why I guess we lean towards Lemos by KO plus 200, but we all kind of hope that we don't see it.
That's right. So now, I mean, now we're on to the featured prelim, right? We got a late notice replacement. I was pretty disappointed to see Abubakar Nurmagomedov fall out of his fight. That was, you know, really sad, especially with the great performance he put on against Gooden in his last time out. But Rodriguez, once again, you know, he gets a guy that is getting a call up to the UFC, had a really nice performance in his last time out. But, I mean, it was funny because we were like just watching before we came on, and the cage was so small, and Guru goes, it looks like human cockfighting. And like, seriously, like, I mean, the absolute style of Preston Parsons is going to be to come forward, throw bombs, and then engage, get to that single or double leg entry, get the takedown, smother. All 9 of his wins are by submission on his Tapology record. I'm hearing that things could be slightly different when we look into the tape, or maybe the specifics of how it happened. I personally didn't have time to break down all the Parsons tape, so shout out to Lock of the Night. I would definitely follow his thoughts as far as breaking down the tape on this one. But from what I saw, just in like the real quick aspects of Parsons, because I mean, this came together quick, and I just think that he's not technical enough. He's a bit more of a brute force type of guy. He has a round one knockout loss to Mike Perry on his record in his second career fight. Also Perry's second career fight. So that was pretty interesting. But he's only 25 years old, right?
Third career fight, but it's all right.
Oopsies.
It's all good. It's not really a big deal.
Nah.
But, listen, Mike Perry was knocking out everybody in 2015, right?
Yeah, but I mean, also earlier in your MMA career, you know, especially now to be 9-2, to be getting knocked out early is definitely something that shows that you have that off button. I know it's against a high level guy like Perry, so you can't discount him too much for that. But like Daniel Rodriguez, to me, that's as high level as it gets. As far as like an entry level opponent in the UFC, like walking in on short notice to Daniel Rodriguez, I would never sign up for that. This is one of the toughest guys, you know. I mean, he knocks out, he should have knocked out Tim Means, and then he ends up getting a submission because it went on to the next round. But like, he had him like grasping on at the end there, and like Daniel Rodriguez to come in and make that type of impression against that type of veteran, and then he has wins against Gabe Green, which like, yeah, you needed to win that fight.
That was his toughest fight so far.
I don't know, man. Dwight Grant he gets dropped.
Oh, that's true.
He turtles up. Tognoni gives him plenty of time to recover. But he was sensible with his turtling. And I really think, you know, then he gets up and then he is able to catch Dwight Grant and then he drops him consecutive times.
Yeah, that was a sick fight.
Like, I mean, oh man.
Reminds me of Pat Barry and Czech Congo. That shit was crazy. Yeah.
And then we come full circle. Mike Perry, unanimous decision. You
skipped a big problem where he actually beat Nicholas Dalby, and it cost us a fuck ton of money.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate.
The judge gave it to Dalby. So really, really, Daniel Rodriguez should be 5-0 in the UFC, but he's 4-1, and he's getting possibly his easiest opponent to date. Sounds like an easy check, fight of the night, I mean, or performance of the night bonus for him. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, so I'm very high on Daniel Rodriguez. I think he should be 5-0 in the UFC as well. I talked to him last week, the day that he found out that his opponent got hurt. So
where can we check out that interview, by the way?
It was a phone call, so I think I'm gonna transcribe it, and it'll be out tomorrow.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
But the big thing I took from it is this is his second fight camp where he's had a whole fight camp, because the first four fights in the UFC mm-hmm. were all short notice fights.
Wow. Pandemic era stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So he had a full camp with Mike Perry and beat the shit out of Mike Perry. That was a great fight.
Satisfying.
It was a near perfect performance. And he had a torn pec in that fight.
Oh,
and still beat the shit out of him. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't know a whole lot about Preston Parsons. I know the bare minimum, just like most people, that he has a 100% finish rate. And he comes forward. A colleague of mine, John Bitter, who's the MMA on MMA Wizard on Twitter, but he is a must follow.
Yeah, we definitely follow, but everybody else should too.
Yeah, he's a he's the best prospect guy on in MMA media. He's high on Preston Parsons, and he thinks that he's very deserving of this call up and fight. And but I just think that Daniel Rodriguez is just the better fighter, man. He I think he beat Dalby, like, you know, like I already said. So he should be 15-1. And his only other loss was a split decision to Victor, and I think he won that too. So he should be undefeated, man. And he comes from Combate. He has the experience. His boxing's crisp.
Really good.
Yeah, very, very, very good. He's a very, very good fighter. And he said in my previous interview that he knows that his time's limited in the sport because he's already 34. Yeah, he's 34.
You got it.
Yeah. Yes.
So he knows time's limited. He knows that, you know, he's in his prime. And if he's going to go for the title, it's his time now. So I think he beats Preston Parsons. I don't know if it's a finish. It's probably going to be a banger of a fight, to be honest. And if it does, and if it's, you know, so it could easily be fight of the night, because that's what Daniel Rodriguez brings. D-Rod comes forward.
Yes.
-290 that it does not go the distance. So they are predicting a finish in this
one. Wow. Okay.
So it could go either way, I think.
I mean, D-Rod's not going to get the sub, right? So, I mean,
we say that, but Parsons has a submission loss, and both of his losses have been by finish. So every single fight that Parsons has ever been in has ended in a finish. However, those are generally the type of guys that they make their debut and they fucking go the distance, right?
Well, so I guess you get to cut your odds in half. So instead of -300 for D-Rod, you can get him at -160 by finish.
To me, I'm just, D-Rod's another piece of my parlay. So you take him and our first fight, Rodrigo Nascimento, and you throw them together. And where does that put us so far? For me to pull the trigger. We got a -350 and a -300, so we're a -140. But don't worry, we got another leg on that parlay coming up. And we'll get there soon. But that's another piece for me. Daniel Rodriguez should run away with this fight. I don't feel comfortable about any method because he's won by every single method in the UFC. So I'm not going to take my chances here because if he hurts him, he could get that standing guillotine. If Parsons goes for the grappling, Rodriguez is good off his back. He's at a 10th planet. So, I mean, he knows what he's doing out there. So parlay piece for me. It's pretty simple.
I think I agree too. It is a little too sketchy to hammer down to one specific method.
Another site that I think in MMA media, MMA Mania, they say Rodriguez by UD just because of the Parsons has a wrestling base, I guess. So that's just another aspect to the fight. I'm with you guys. I don't know how D-Rod's going to win, but I know he's going to win. Just put it that way.
I like it. So that's a nice consensus pick right there. Seems like we feel good about it. So I plan to lose that one miserably.
Yeah, right. And don't worry. Badu's going to win by a flying spin kick. So it's going to be great.
Let's get on to the fun. We made it to the main card. And this is one of those other fights I was talking about down the line here. Gabriel Benitez, Mowgli, we got -164. Billy Quarantine, as Dan Tom might say. Billy Quarantillo, one of the best personalities out there as far as new guys on the scene. Came out of Dana White Contender Series. He's a legit Gracie black belt. He was actually also on Ultimate Fighter. At least on a finale. Ultimate Fighter.
He was on the season.
Yeah, I mean, he was at Gracie Tampa. He was also Sarah Longo Fight Team. So Billy Q, he's been grappling with some legit guys. There's no question about that. We saw it in just about every single one of his fights, except for against Gavin Tucker, where he really didn't get the opportunity to grapple offensively because he couldn't really get him down. That was a little concerning. But Now he comes in against Gabriel Benitez, someone that doesn't have quite the same type of takedown defense, but I got a feeling that Billy's going to do his classic round one thing, and we're going to see like a beatdown early. And as long as Billy survives that, I mean, I think he turns the tides, does his normal thing, gets a little late turnaround. But I'm real sketched out to place a bet on this fight before it starts, because I do think Benitez is going to be landing some heavy stuff early. You know, is it a finish? Is it not? I'm not sure. He didn't look great on the scale last time, missing weight. He's got to go back up. So maybe the power isn't carrying as much. Benitez, he is 6-4 in the UFC. His wins aren't against the best names, you know, Bandanai, Knight, Cecilia, Collard, Morrison. Not the most impressive stuff. And then his losses come against some pretty impressive names. Omar Morales, Sadiq Youssef, Barzola, Feely. Two of those are round one knockouts. So, like, not that I think Billy Q has the best striking, but, like, Benitez has shown he has an off button. So there's just so much variability for me in this one. And, like, I see a lot of people jumping on the Billy Q side. You know, it slid to plus 136 now. He opened up closer to, like, a plus 150, plus 160, at least on FanDuel where we could get him. I don't have as strong a pull on this one as I did earlier with Morozov. I might end up playing Billy Q after weigh-ins. I might wait to play it live. What do you think?
So what Billy Q lacks in power, he makes up for in volume, but with that volume, he puts himself in a lot of reckless situations, and it shows in his striking defense stats. 42%. That means that he's taking weight, even though he's going out of his way to inflict 7 strikes per minute. It's not helping that your defense is so low. And then you put into perspective that he's also kind of a slow starter in that first round. It makes for this fight to be quite sketchy. And then you start breaking down Mowgli Benitez. And again, it's about just as sketchy. Was supposed to fight Jonathan Pierce, misses weight, and Jonathan Pierce says, "No, I will not fight you." We haven't seen Jonathan Pierce since, unfortunately. I hope he gets another fight. It's kind of interesting. So I guess, right, he changes weight class. Right now he's at featherweight, back to featherweight, I should say, to try to make weight more religiously, I guess, to try harder at the weight cut. How do you miss weight at? Oh, the Pierce fight was going to be at featherweight. Did I mess that up? What was that fight scheduled at?
So,
because his last fight versus Justin James was a lightweight fight, and he, you know, that was a weird fight because he's kind of got hit in that fight, and his eye swelled up. But I think, that knee to the body was beautiful.
A lot of the trouble with the weight classes also is that, like, there were a lot of short notice fights and, like, catch weights during the pandemic when Quarantillo was fighting, and then you had Benitez moving up and down weight. But this one is going to be at 145, right?
So yeah, it is. So the thing that I see with Billy Q is that he relies on his movement. And what is Benitez best at? Leg kicks. And leg kicks are going to really hinder that movement. You watched Mowgli Benitez kick the back leg of Justin James, not his lead leg, but the back one. And that shut James down really emphatically. When all of MMA Twitter starts jumping on a dog like that, I start to get a little nervous. And I really, really like Billy Q as a person. But this fight, he has me a little nervous. So I do want to see weigh-ins, of course, especially at such a low weight, lightweight class, and what we talked about with Gabriel Benitez's weight cutting issues. I like this fight, call me crazy, but this fight not to go the distance at plus 120.
What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, we need more Alex.
this is Billy Q's first fight with LASIK surgery. All of his previous fights, he's fighting with contacts.
Ooh, and illegal technically.
Yeah, and his lap, and so that is going to play a big factor in this fight, in my opinion. Gabriel Benitez, that knee that he landed against Justin James was disgusting. Oh my god,
so perfect.
Oh man, he went like flying across the octagon.
Oh man, it hurt so bad. You could just tell. Mm-hmm. I like all of your guys' points. But I think this is an easy win for Billy Q. I think he's just going to decision Benitez. Before his loss to Gavin Tucker, he was on an 8-fight win streak. And, it was very impressive. He's been around the block. He's been on Tough. He's been on the Contender Series. He's a vet now at only 32 years old. And I think hopefully Benitez has his weight, all good. I don't think he's going to miss, but, that weight cut might play mind games with him. You know what I'm saying? Who knows how his training camp went. I didn't get the chance to talk to him, and I haven't seen a lot of media talk to him either. That is interesting, but I do think Billy Q will defeat him unanimous decision.
Wow. So not only can you get Billy Q as your underdog money lines at +136, but you can get Billy Q by decision at +290. So yeah.
Now, my question, because knowing Billy Q and, like, Gabriel Benitez doesn't have, like, the best gas tank or anything, and Billy Q is known to get his grappling going late, he looks like he was in great shape from what I saw, what he posted, I think,
on Instagram. Today. He looks shredded.
Yeah, I think you sent it to me, Guru. So if we say, maybe, like, round three or decision, that could be, something interesting. So
+240
for Billy Q, then you could say maybe he gets a late finish or it goes the distance. And that seems pretty attractive at +240. Now we're talking my language. And like, I feel like Alex, that's a really good note on the LASIK. That's, that is such a huge thing, especially for his striking defense. If you see the strikes coming a little bit clearer and he's a vet now, you're right. I don't think that he's going to be any quicker, Benitez, than Gavin Tucker as far as the striking goes. But I do think another important thing to note is that it's tough when someone is on the front foot against you and backing you up to get off leg kicks. So if Quarantillo is putting on the pressure, then Benitez might not be able to get him stopped as much.
He does come out in every single fight, and the first, within 5 seconds, he smashes you with a leg kick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but it's a question of, you have to be. It's in the game plan. But Quarantillo, can he, over time, get him to go away from them, even on the earlier side, just from pushing the pace and getting in his face?
And I think you can.
Yeah, and he's got that Homer Simpson approach, so.
I think he saw that in the Omar Morales fight where –
yes.
Benitez's strike started to dwindle.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But, it seems like, I'm kind of coming around more now on the Billy Q side. I'm not quite sure I'm locking it in.
Neither
but,
am I.
I want to see the weigh-in and take a look out on our socials for our final bets, because I always putting them out there, whatever the big ones are to finish out the week. So keep an eye, because now I'm thinking about that. And what do you got?
No, I was going to say also, Billy Q is coming off his loss, right? And he hasn't lost in a long time. So, yeah, exactly. It's been a long time. It's been since.
He was on a very long streak. It was like 8 fights or something.
Yeah, 2016 is the last time he lost. It was 8-fight win streak, snapped.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that's also, he's coming in to prove something. He felt embarrassed with that loss against Gavin Tucker. So that's another aspect in play that he's coming out.
Oh my goodness. These narratives are juicy.
Damn, I'm getting the tingle now.
Whoa, easy with your tingle. All right there, pal. You handle that after the podcast.
But so that brings us to our next fight, which I think – is going to be the first one of the fight card that I am going to strictly tell you to stay the fuck away from this fight.
Jesus Christ.
Dude, no, serious, man. Like, the more I think about it, the more I look into it. Rodolfo Vieira, Dustin Stolzfus, why do I need to make a bet on this fight?
Because I'm going to have degenerate.
Bets early. I'm going to have bets late. Rodolfo Vieira, how can you trust his gas tank, but at the same time, how can you underrate his wrestling and ability to get that first round sub? I mean, either one is so primed to happen. Solstice, if he survives this early storm, people are going to be lining up at the window to place live bets on him. Vieira, he's got that round two finish against Pichota, but it didn't look so pretty getting there.
Can I jump in real quick and just...
Yeah, yes, please.
Bet Vieira. He's going to win this fight. Dustin is good. He just doesn't have it to beat Vieira. Vieira will beat him.
I like it.
He doesn't have the same striking as Fluffy, that's for sure.
No, he doesn't have the fluff striking as Fluffy. Exactly. I find myself so, I guess maybe it's just Rodolfo Vieira hating. I feel like I'm smelling value in Stolzfus. I see twister wins on his resume. I see a knee bar win on his resume. I'm thinking this guy can grapple. I'm thinking he may not get submitted. Even if he gets 10-8 in the first and can hold off on getting choked out, I mean, how in your right mind can you put your hard-earned cash on Rodolfo Vieira? Whether he quit or not in his last fight with Fluffy is only for him to know. It seemed like he was pretty much concussed. But, I mean, that gas tank was suspect in the Pichota fight in his debut and the Saparov fight. If he didn't sub Saparov in the third minute of that first round, his eye was swollen shut. I don't know that they would have let him come out for a second round. So, I'm so very much concerned. He was a huge favorite versus Hernandez, loses, and comes out and is a huge favorite again.
I think it's a little different as far as like the line goes, just because.
Of course it's different. Yeah, it was -500 to -250. It's a huge difference.
And I think Stolzfus is worse than Hernandez. That's why, like, I totally get what Alex is saying, because, like,
I do too.
When I'm handicapping this fight, I'm saying Vieira should be like a -500 against this guy. And like the first round submission is going to be what happens. But like, wow, just from like a mental standpoint, and like it's about the bets you don't all make right versus the bets you do. Like, to me, like, it's so clear what's going to happen. But like, because I got burned the specific way last time, like, I didn't even really like parlay Vieira or do anything crazy. It was just like the belief in him, and then just to be let down and think that someone has like that level. And then you go back and watch the fight, and I think you kind of mentioned it, like, we talked a lot about like, oh, the gas tank this, the gas tank that, but like, he got concussed on like 3 or 4 different strikes and continually getting dropped to his knees to go for shoot for takedowns. And I think it had a lot more to do with that than just the gas tank.
Yeah, I would certainly tend to agree. I find myself really struggling. So, well, you made an interesting point, though, and I wasn't necessarily doing that. I guess I was doing the opposite. I'm taking the recency bias too much, and that's a problem. So maybe, as you're saying, it should be a -500 again, and now the recency bias has pushed that line down to -250. You know, that means that there should be value on Vieira if that's the case.
Yeah, and it's just the bad taste. So that's why I said stay away. Because so to me, like, that's what it means to me.
Well, all right, but
not to fade.
Right, but to make it interesting, why not look at, I guess, the only thing that's really possible then, right? Vieira in submission in round one is +200. Vieira by submission in round two is +700. And if you had to do that round grouping prop that we like, where is that? Here it is. Vieira round one or two -105.
Those are the ways to get it to a much more palatable bet.
Still insane, obviously.
I hope I stick to my guns on this one, just because, like, when I tell myself not to bet a fight and then I end up betting.
You're going to be off work for a change. I always be betting. You're going to be betting. You're going to be off work.
Also, let me just a couple other things. So, Dustin, before he went and got a contract, you know, he got that contract on the Dana White contender series by breaking that dude's arm, right? Do you remember that?
Yes, yes, with the slam, yeah.
Yeah. So before that, he only fought in Germany because he lived out there. So, and if you only fight in one part of the world, I believe that it's kind of like the Alaska FC kind of thing, where a lot of those guys are just trash cans. I'm not saying that Dustin is a trash can. I'm not saying that he fought a bunch of cans, but that's on my mind. That's on
it's
my
a
mind.
Trend.
Yeah, exactly. And
I didn't say it. It's something I heard from somebody else that I kind of agree with.
What's that Michael Scott line? It wasn't my joke. It was my brother's.
Exactly. And, you know, it just Fluffy's win over Vieira it's just one of those things. It's just one of those wins that it's going to go down in history. You know what I'm saying? It's just one of those, you know, one of those things that will go down in history. And would it happen again? Who knows? Probably not. But I just think that Vieira, one, he was fucking embarrassed to all hell, right? He's embarrassed. So, and he said that, you know, his gas tank fucked up. He gassed himself. He's not going to do that again. It will not happen again. He's not going to gas himself. Dustin does not have better striking, so he's not going to piece them up on the feet. And if they get down to the ground, Dustin is not going to beat an 80cc champion, one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys on the planet. So I just don't know. I just don't see a way Dustin wins this unless he outpoints him, which I just don't see that happening. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I feel that. Because the wrestling is good of Vieira. It's not like he's not a good wrestler.
Exactly.
It goes along with the BJJ. It's just, he's just such a gigantic dude. I do want to see him on the scales.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think this is just like
levels.
Yeah, exactly. It's levels to it. I'm kind of with you. I think this is just not a bettable fight. Just don't do it. Because for some reason, if Vieira does lose, like,
I don't think you could ever live yourself down if you bet him this one after like taking him in the lesson. Like, it's just like that mental thing. Like, you might have to quit betting MMA forever. So it's like, I'm just trying to stay in the game. And if I could stay away from this one fight I told myself to stay away from, I'll be so proud of myself. So we'll see how I do. Check in after the fights.
No, we're betting it. I'm gonna get you sipping that JMO. You're gonna be bad. I put 10 units on Dustin Stolfus. Let's go.
Oh my god. All right. Well, let's get on to our next fight. We probably spent too much time on that one, but it was fun. I had a great time. So now we got a really interesting one: Jeremy Stephens versus Matthijs Gamrot. And when Gamrot,
real quick.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, please.
Gamrot's going to beat first round stoppage. That's
yes.
Whoa.
Yes. This is my final leg of my parlay. Let's go. Let's go, Alex. Thank you. He just gave me the confidence, man.
He's going to beat the shit out of Jeremy Stephens first
round. Wow.
Hell yeah.
Beat the shit out of Jeremy.
Yes. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. So. Let's get you want to hear why? Let's get into like the breakdown of why that's going to happen. All right.
Talk to me.
So, just from a statistical standpoint, when you first look at Jeremy Stephens, I mean, he's not like terrible on surface level. You know, he lands 3, he only receives 3, so he's like kind of even, but like 40% accuracy and 58% defense, you know, not great. He's getting hit a little bit more than he's landing, and
level of competition would be my first rebuttal to that.
Yes, but at the same time, like as you've seen him in recent years here, it just hasn't been too pretty for Stephens. I mean, that dude was inches away from getting finished on the feet by Yair Rodriguez before turning it around, and you know, like putting on
that should have been a 5-round fight. He was going to win that fight.
It was a 5-round fight, like it should have been. He was going to win that fight.
All right, so this is going to maybe. Well, this is going to be a 3-round fight. So yeah. so, anyways, you know, I mean, listen. Yes, we're talking level of competition. All these great names that Stevens has faced. The dude is 15-17 in the UFC. He's got some fucking tread on those tires, and he's been knocked out 3 times. He's been subbed 3 times, and 12 decision losses. I mean, tread on the tires, and I don't think that Stevens is getting any better at this point. His knockout win over Josh Emmett was fucking bullshit. Alex posted something not too long ago. It got me all my blood all boiling. Like,
yeah, I hated that win. Yeah, I really, because I really like Josh Emmett. He's had a tough run.
Yeah, I feel he's one of my favorites, and he's just, you're right. Like, his body just has taken damage that it never should have, and it's disappointing. Yeah. But like, no. So Jeremy Stevens, that's one of his wins. His other win before that, you got Choi by round 2 knockout. You got the corpse of Gilbert Melendez in 2017, the corpse of Henan Barao in 2016, Dennis Bermudez in 2015, and Darren Elkins, who, like, as much as we love the damage, like, come on, man, like, those are some of his most recent, like, big name wins. Like, and then you go all the way back, and sure, he's got like plenty more names on there, but like, none that we really want to talk about.
His best win ever is in 2008. His knockout win in round 3 over Rafael Dos Anjos at UFC 91.
And great.
Couture versus Lesnar.
Back in 2008. Now, look at Gamrot. He comes over. He's with American Top Team. He's been training hands-on with Dustin Poirier, getting him ready for the trilogy fight. You see all the stuff of them together. That's a great sign. You see, he was the KSW lightweight champion from 2016 to 2020. He was also the featherweight champion from 2018 to 2019. So he knows a little something about being champ. He's got wrestling, Muay Thai, BJJ, boxing. He's got amateur MMA championships.
He's a mixed martial artist.
He's got no, but like, I would say he uses all of those.
He's well-rounded.
Well. Like, it's not that he just has those on like, oh, this is what I do. Like, he's got BJJ competitions that he's come away with, ADCC. His coach is wrestling world champion Andrzej Kochaleski. I probably butchered that name. But he's got this stable of guys that have really been preparing him. And then he comes in and makes his debut, huge favorite against Guram Kutateladze. And I don't think you can make a tougher debut against someone that has such a low name. But like, his level of grappling and just unpredictability, his willingness to throw crazy strikes and just making an ugly fight. And people still thought Gamrot won that fight, which I'm not 100% sure how I felt. Like, I thought Kutateladze.
Where is Guram, by the way?
He was supposed to fight, actually, Don on Madge, this card.
Right. Yeah, Don
and,
Madge.
But he had to pull out, I think.
I don't even know if Don Madge is still with the promotion.
It's a good question. But, yeah, so, I mean, Gamrot now, he fights really well switch. He could get it any which way. He had a crazy knockout of Holtzman in round 2. But, yeah, I just think Stevens, he throws caution to the wind. Gamrot is really just and he's going to be worried about the takedowns of Gamrot, which kind of opens up the striking even more. And yeah, I could totally see a first round finish. I could see Gamrot winning any which way here. So just take him. I mean, third leg of my parlay, you got him at -215. So that boosts your parlay. Now you got Nascimento, Daniel Rodriguez, and Gamrot +151. Hammer.
Wow. Gamrot round 1 is +430 if you're really feeling spicy.
Maybe a little spicy, a little sprinkle, you know?
This is Jeremy Stevens. This is basically UFC giving him a punishment for.
I was about to say that too, because I think Fight Night picks were on that as well. They were supposed to fight Jakar Close, which is, I think, a similar matchup in some aspects, but not as tough. I think that Gamrot is a little bit more well-rounded, especially in the wrestling. And
this is the UFC punishing Jeremy Stevens for hurting Jakar Close and ruining that co-main event. This is also Jeremy Stevens going up to lightweight for the first time since 2008.
Was it against
Yves Levine?
Yves Edwards.
Yeah. So
long time ago.
2012.
So it's been 11 years.
That's a long time.
And that's 9 years. 10 years. I'm sorry. So I just unless Jeremy Stephens knocks him out in the first round, there's no way he wins this fight.
Wow. Yeah. You're probably right. And it's a good way to cut through the bullshit, because somebody like me really likes Jeremy Stephens and tries to find a way. Oh, well, he's lost to, you know, only top guys. And, you know, I try to find a way to cut it. And, you know, you found a way to cut through the bullshit. So I like that.
You're totally right. He has lost to a bunch of killers, you know, but also it's just
not the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
He should have been gone probably a while. I mean, if he didn't fight everybody who he's fought, he probably would have been cut by now.
100%.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So sounds like we got another consensus pick, which makes me feel even better about the parlay. And, now let's get on to our co-main event. One that, I mean, if you have a strong take and a heavy lean on the side, that's great. But, I mean, there's so many variables in this fight outside of just the cold, hard statistics. And, like, is Marion Renault fully motivated in her retirement fight? Is Misha Tate, you know, after, you know, giving birth, like, last year, is this, like, I want to get back in and prove it type, like, a Nina Nunes thing? Or is this like Misha Tate is in like some of the best shape we've ever seen her physically, and like ready to come out and prove a point? So, I mean, I lean towards the Tate side, but, you know, looking at how this fight opened, right now we got Misha Tate at -144 and Marion Renault at +118, which is probably fair. I really do think that Tate should be able to get to the grappling aspect of this fight and you know, find her way and, you know, celebrate a nice return over a solid name in the division. But yeah, I mean, like, she opened a -130. Line keeps on getting pushed to -142 on FanDuel. So I think the people kind of see what's going on. The UFC would love for Misha Tate to win. That's obvious. So I would say, like, listen, -142, that's pretty playable on its own if you wanted a little action on this fight. Also, if you want to say, like, Marion Renault has never been finished before in her career and she doesn't want to end her career by getting finished, I mean, maybe you want to say that it's a decision win.
You have to figure that Marion Renault, whatever she has left, she's going to empty the gas tank because she's got nothing left to lose. This is it for her. So she's just going to throw. I mean, I don't know that she's going to throw caution to the wind in terms of being reckless, but I just mean in terms of making sure to leave nothing, no stone unturned. Like, she's going to try really hard would be my thought, unless she's just phoning it in for a check, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Alex, what are you thinking here, man?
I think Misha Tate beat Marion Renault. I think Misha Tate is fighting for something different now. She said it in every interview. She's been very open about it. I mean, she was in a very toxic relationship with Brian Caraway. I'll just that fucking douchebag. That's what it was. And so now she's refocused. She is a mama bear. She has a new team around her, new training partners. I don't think she's going to go in there and, you know, beat the shit out of Marion Renault, because Marion Renault has never really had that happen to her. She's always kept it competitive. She's lost a lot of split decisions. She's definitely not the most exciting fighter. That might be an understatement.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But I think this is a perfect coming, perfect opponent for Misha Tate to come back. And get that win, and with the win, she'll be in the rankings. She'll probably fight Yana Kuna Kaya next, maybe Irene Aldana, like a big name next, and then she'll fight Amanda Nunes again.
Wow.
Yeah, I think this is for real. I'm very curious to see how she looks, because she looks
shredded on Instagram, and she looks in the best shape she's possibly ever been in her life in that respect. I just wonder, 5 years out of the octagon, you know, we learned from like McGregor, you can't, there's no substitute for a time in the octagon. So 5 years away, I do worry that if she takes a punch and just is like, whoa, I, you know what, maybe I don't want this as much as I thought I did. I mean, listen, you got to figure more. She's a former UFC champion, former Strikeforce champion, and of course is in the gym sparring, right? So I just like
your thought there. I do. I appreciate that. I just don't think that
Renault's the one to push it.
That, yeah, for 100%. And I think she's in there for a reason. Like, she is.
Mm.
She was embarrassed in her last fight. She's like,
against Pennington, yeah.
Yeah, Pennington beat the shit out of her.
Yeah, she really did. Like, that was not pretty. And you know, we actually saw her start mixing in, like, a few leg kicks early. Like, it was like she came out looking solid, and she gets that one takedown. You're like, all right.
Her nose smashed in and choked out by Amanda Nunes and takes that fight 4 months later. Who the fuck? Who is her manager at that point? Who does that to her? Why did the UFC do that to her? That's horrible. That's really horrible.
She also said during media day this week that she had the chance to fight on that McGregor card, but she chose not to. So a very big just something to keep in mind, because fighting on a McGregor card is humongous.
So do you think she just didn't want the pressure?
Maybe
because she got the co-main event, so she still got the pressure. So I'm curious as to why she wouldn't have done that.
I think it's she wanted her own fight week, maybe.
Mm.
Yeah, and you know, it could be pressure, you know, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, no, for sure. So
talk about definitely. I mean, tasty possible prop idea. I'm feeling like I'm coming around on this Misha Tate money line. It's really not that wide, especially. Mm-mm. Yeah, you're right. The way the narrative leans, I mean, it really should be Tate, right? And maybe, I mean, you know, the decision is +110.
It's boosted on FanDuel at the moment, which always gives us some sort of pause.
So that's why I was kind of seeing, like, Misha Tate by submission is +850. And, like, Renault in her last fight, like, I heard James Krause talking about it. You start worrying, like, she's never going to be thinking about a fight camp or fighting again. And, like, at this point, like, where she might have not given up to something in the past, to a bad position, to something
she's
like
never been
is this where it's like, well, this is my last fight, and like, what do I have to fight for anymore? And
she
like,
has
if
her
I get finished, like
she
plus
has
850
her,
submission plus
she has her son in her corner, Marion Renault. I know from listening to the UFC Unfiltered pod, she has her son in her corner. Like, I believe, you know, a teenager or young adult. So I don't think that she's gonna go out there and get subbed, choked out in front of her family.
Yeah, also, she's the oldest fighter on the UFC roster.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fact. 2 weeks older than Alexia Lenik.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Also, you have to take into the fact that the MMA gods will not let you retire on a win. So, it's just a fact.
I like that.
All right. So,
unless you're Khabib, but that was,
I was about to say, that doesn't count.
Well, if you ask Dana, he's not retired.
Yeah. Don't worry, he's coming back. What's happened with Henry Cejudo retiring on a win?
That was forced too.
Here we are, guys. We made it to the main event and the widest line of the whole entire card. And I mean, can we really argue with it too much? I mean, listen, if you ask me, you know, what do you want to see? I want to see chaos. I want to see, you know, the big underdogs win.
Chaos William.
All that. Yes, he'll be coming back at some point, right? But Thiago Moises +540 and the protege, following father's plan, Khabib retires and now steps up Islam Makhachev, big time veteran, 8-1 in the UFC, that one knockout against Martins back in 2015. So, you know, Makhachev does seem to have an off button, and Moises does throw some big bombs, but yeah, I mean, Makhachev has only been landed on at like a clip of less than a strike per minute, which is absolutely sickening. His striking defense is 70%.
It's a UFC record. Strikes getting landed on.
Less than 15 strikes landed against him per fight. And it's not like he doesn't go to the distance. Like, it's so impressive breaking down his overall record. He's one knockout, 3 submissions, 4 decisions just in the UFC. I mean, that Drew Dober performance, maybe you think he could get an earlier stoppage based off of, you know, the jiu-jitsu level, but just still, I mean, the way he got it and from what angle, I mean, for them to put down that he finished it from half guard is substantial, you know?
Yeah.
Next up, you know, you got Moises who really came up, you know, training since 8 years old, jiu-jitsu black belt, training with his family, hot prospect, only 26 still, 4-2 of the UFC. I really liked picking him against Hernandez in the last fight, but this is just a whole other level. Moises, I would really like to see him come out and continue his trajectory and shake up the division, but Makhachev is just really just on like another stratosphere, it seems, and like the wrestling of Moises isn't as impressive as it could be. He did get taken down twice by Bobby Green in his last fight. Not his last fight, but a couple fights ago. And Hernandez is not really the offensive wrestler like that. And they had a striking battle. But I don't think the leg lock game is going to really work against such a high-level wrestler, international master of sport in combat sambo, and a 2016 combat sambo world champion, Islam Makhachev. He's not getting submitted. I don't see that happening. I see Moises's jiu-jitsu more being the reason why he doesn't get finished. So for me, the only thing that gives me pause to playing this fight to go to decision is that it's a 5-rounder. I haven't seen either guy do it yet. And Moises has never been finished before. So it makes me really want to play Makhachev by decision. But he's coming out here with something to prove. Could be sketchy.
Yeah.
I just think the safest type of idea is getting Makhachev and the over, whether it's, you know, round 4 or 5 decision, whether it's, you know, fight to start X round and Makhachev to win, or Makhachev and over 2.5, like depending on what book you have. You know, for us, we're looking specifically at a 4-5 decision
on FanDuel.
Makhachev FanDuel -185. That's also probably a parlayable piece. Maybe you want to do a co-main and main parlay of like Misha Tate money line and Makhachev 4-5 decision to get some plus money juice on it. I won't put those in like my big parlay just because some of the value's not there. And when you're playing around with like props like that, I get a little nervous. But I think that would be kind of fun. And like, I just don't see the way that Moises comes out and wins a decision. He would need to finish a knockout early.
Yeah, I mean, when was the last time that we had a main event where the odds were this lopsided at -820 and +570? I can't even think of one. Alex, do you have any idea? Where this lopsided of a main event. I'm going to see a real unique Twitter post from you tomorrow, and it's going to be inspired by me. You're going to find the craziest. Because, I mean, it might be like Rousey Holm or something. I mean, there's not going to be that many main events where it was this far apart. It's really quite bizarre.
Maybe so, Usman Masvidal.
That's close.
Mm. Mm.
That's close to this. Usman was like -400.
Edwards Muhammad, maybe.
That was -335, yeah. Right? So that's, you're getting close, but this is twice as much. He's -820. This is insanity.
That really is substantial.
So I think those lines are a little bit way extreme for me. I think they're just playing on the Khabib Islam connection, obviously. Obviously Islam's very, very talented, and I just don't know if he's just like the next guy, you know what I'm saying? And just because of the Khabib connection, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's what happens if, not that I think it's going to happen because I think he's just going to keep spamming takedowns, but what happens if you can't take Thiago Moises down? Well, it's going to be a long 25 minutes for you. So
that's why I hope they get the fucking Islam Makhachev versus Gregor Gillespie fight. That's the fight that
Yes. Ooh, man, that would be crazy. Fun.
Wow. No, he's too busy calling his shots. He knows exactly who he wants, and the UFC will give it to him. He wants RDA. He wants Tony Ferguson. He wants these guys that he can sit on top of.
I'm just not on the Islam train, obviously. And I do think that his win over Sarukian was that's a fantastic win.
It really was impressive. Even Dami Hamos.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good one. And a win over Drew Dober is good, although Dober is not the best
grappler.
Grappler.
You got it.
So I just think that I think maybe saying his record's padded is a little extreme, but I think it's a little bit not the best, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of talking extreme here, but I'm just not on the train yet. But if he mauls Moises for five rounds, I'll be on the back of the train.
And this is his coming out party. You know, we've all been itching for him to have a big fighter, a big name, to have a big spot. So he gets the main event. He gets the five round fight. It's just kind of unfortunate that there's no push behind this card at all. There's no real, let's just be honest, there's no real buzz behind this card. And then the B side of the card is Thiago Moises, we like him because we love this shit, but like, does he have a real big following? Does he have any sort of buzz or push? So it's kind of a like I started the card, it's a little bit of a bittersweet feeling, because again, we were kind of supposed to be having Max Holloway, Yair Rodriguez, which would have been insane. A bunch of fights fell off this card, honestly. But so yeah, like I said, it's kind of a bittersweet moment because we do finally get Islam Makhachev's bright shining moment. But it's how bright and shining is it? Like you said, it's about his performance. If he comes out there, he flatlines Moises, or he comes out there and just ragdolls him, you know, 50-44, 50-43 for 25 minutes. I mean, you're right. It will be a major, major thing for him. But if there's some sort of resistance at all from Thiago Moises, it's going to be a crazy night. The one thing about this card is that the lines are all over the place. This card is primed for a bunch of crazy upsets. And the one thing I do want to say, I'd be remiss if I didn't say it, is that when you're a -800, -900 favorite, you should blast through your opponent, right? Like we almost saw it with Sean O'Malley on some level. Like you should be able to blast through your opponent when you're at that high of a money line, at that high of a price. So for us to handicap this fight, not only do we somehow agree that he's that high of a money line, but we think it's going to go the distance. It's kind of, I feel like they're, contrary.
Yeah.
At least on some levels.
It's the contradictory. Hype train. It's the hype train. Like, I definitely don't agree that this is where the line should be, but it's like every person I hear handicapping or breaking down this fight agrees. It's like, there's no way that this is what the line should be, but it's like if Makhachev is really what he's cut out to be, then sure. I mean, it might end up looking like it even if he can't get the finish.
Bro, I want to see him get clipped so bad, like in his second UFC fight, just because that was the craziest knockout ever. And if that happens again, though, the world will fall on its axis. What do you think, Alex?
Thiago Moises was taken down a lot by Benil Dariush and Demir, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. So, and then, of course, Bobby Green a couple times, too.
Right. Like, so that is, I mean, maybe that's what's playing in. They just think that Islam can take this guy down at will, which if that is the case, then, yeah, I mean, it'll be an easy night. It's just Moises is legit. He's real good. He's got the submission. He's got the camp. He knows. In all of his interviews, it seems like he knows something that we don't. And that is always very fascinating to me. Because he has nothing to lose, right? Because he's
nothing to lose.
He's supposed to lose.
I love what he said. And he's like, there's like four wins for me. Because it's like, it would put him so far ahead. If you're right, if he does win, he could have his pick of the litter in terms of the top eight.
Yeah. So, I just, what is his path to victory? Is it submission? Is it points, you know what I'm saying? I don't know.
So I guess it does make me interested because what sticks out in my mind here is like Guru saying this is his chance, the bright lights, the main event. He was supposed to have this a few months ago, if you don't remember, when our boy Paul Felder hops in on late notice to fight who?
Rafael RDA. Yeah.
So like Islam was supposed to have this step up against RDA. Alex, do you remember why he pulled out of that fight specifically? Was it COVID? Was it his back?
Staph infection.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. So you would imagine that's healed by this point, obviously. So that's not something like COVID where you might have the symptoms. The cardio could be affected. It looked like he was at his normal training camp in the mountains, Makhachkala, all that. So it's like I do think he will be ready to go the five. There should be a coming out party. I will be saying that Makhachev is like my official like pick, but like, I don't know, maybe I'm getting a little sketched off of placing a bet on it because it's like something does seem fishy, you know, like that's why I really like, obviously the money line and parlaying, the money line is just like, that's a rookie mistake right there waiting to happen. And like, I feel like a lot of people might get taught a lesson this week if we're not careful. Like I'm getting that eerie feeling like you guys are saying, I don't know, something weird.
Yeah. I just think the weird feeling is how difficult it's going to be to like, to really hone in how Islam is going to win. Because, I mean, he could come out and just fucking submit him in the first round and we'll be like, oh, well, there's that. And that really wouldn't be that surprising. Or it could be a really long decision and it could be really freaking boring. And we'd be like, okay, well, that's not really that surprising either. You know, because I'm not that Islam boring, but just, I don't know, he slows the fight down and, you know, he will transition through each and every grappling position. And if it's, obviously, if Moises is not getting submitted, it's just going to be 25 minutes of smashing. I don't know. I think the line is sketchier than the fight actually is. So
that's fair. That's fair.
If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that really just about wraps it up.
Right, Alex, any final thoughts?
Of the fights, on any of it?
It's a... I like this fight card. If I were to bet what fight of the night is, it's probably going to be D-Rod versus Parsons or Taha versus Sergey. And, I mean, like you guys said, there are some upsets could be on the horizon.
There's gonna be. It's impossible not to be. The lines are so wide. There's so many wide lines. You know, we have 13 fight cards sometimes where like the widest line is -300. We have like five fights over -300 and over on like a 9-fight card, 10-fight card. I mean, it's they got some crazy lines, and not to mention you jumped out of your skin with Billy Q and with who was the other one?
Sergey Morozov
in terms of them being dogs. Yeah. So that's two upsets you expect right there, let alone anybody that you might not.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to break it down. And thank you guys if you made it this far. Let's give you a little taste of our best picks here. Guru, I'm a throw out. I have my big parlay of the day is going to be Rodrigo Nascimento. Then we're going to add in Matheus Gamrot and Daniel Rodriguez. So that'll be a 3-leg parlay. I got that at +151 for right now. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm telling that.
Settling. Then, you know, as far as like the dog of the day, like we said, we're looking at Morozov. And, you know, now I'm starting to feel that Billy Q also, especially if we're talking that, you know, round three or decision at +200. That was interesting. And finally, you know, maybe we're looking at Misha Tate as a straight bet in the co-main, seemed to really start leaning that way. And Malcolm Gordon as like a little underdog play. Those are my best feelings.
Yeah, I kind of agree with pretty much all those. I wrote down a bunch of different plays to try to be a little bit more organized this week. We like the Islam round 4-5 decision -185. We like the Misha Tate decision, +110. The Gamrot money line, or even Gamrot by finish. That's the Alex special.
We got – there were a bunch of crazy things in that Vieira fight you should probably avoid. But, but you know, round one sub plus 200, round two sub plus 700, hard to hate that. Billy Q, money line or decision. Thinking about that one still, obviously, way independent, but hard to hate that. D-Rod's a pretty much a parlay piece throughout. I think we really like him. Lemos is the pick, but definitely kind of want to stay away, at least for me, in a betting perspective. Maybe I'll parlay it because I'm fucking crazy. Morozov is our dog of the day. John's by decision plus 120. I don't know. I still like that Fig Gordon fight to go the distance at plus 152. It probably won't, but I might take a stab just because I'm stubborn to see if I'm right. And Nascimento by sub plus 100. Nascimento in general, probably parlayable, but
yeah,
we totally did. Yep.
I mean, listen, guys, just bet responsibly, please, because this isn't one of those cards you want to blow your whole bankroll on. But I think it's going to be entertaining, and we're going to learn a lot in the co-main and the main and all along this card. So, Alex Behunin, Cage Side Press, thank you so much for joining us. It really was a pleasure breaking these down. You gave us some good perspective on a lot of these fights. It was awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun. I hope to do another one with you guys soon. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Alex Behunin. I write for KSI Press. I also do my Humanizing Athletes series, and that's on my personal website, alexbehunin.com.
Awesome. Seriously, Alex, thank you so much for being a part of this. You're somebody that's, at least the way I see it, really respected in the MMA community as a journalist, and somebody that's, like, at least I've seen in the last 3 months, 6 months, like, just blowing up in terms of your importance in the sphere. You know, you and Marcel are like, oh, okay, breaking news is here. You know, Alex said something, and that, you know, that really holds to, at least to me, holds weight, you know, when I see it, one of your tweets come out.
I appreciate the kind words.
Of course. So seriously, thank you so much for being a part, man. You can follow him, like he said, at Alex Behunin on Twitter or Instagram. You can follow us at Chronic Combat on Twitter, at Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, like our videos, send them to your friends, give us some feedback. Please follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. So, when you're subscribed, you get our new episodes right away. Give us a 5-star rating while you're at it. You can follow my awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And you can find me, Guru Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thank you all so much for being here. We'll see you next week for UFC Vegas 32, Sanhagen versus Dillashaw. Oh, my goodness gracious.
And Alex is going to be there.
Yes, I am.
Oh, man, that's going to be sick.
Have a great time for us, man. Get all the pictures, and we'll see you in those interviews. You've been killing it.
The CEO of EPO.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Guys.